I'm Arun Roth, filling in for Tanzina, and this is The Takeaway. In June of last year, Immigration and Customs Enforcement's New York field office made an announcement. It would no longer take detained migrants to court hearings in person. Instead, it would begin holding hearings exclusively through video teleconferences. On Tuesday, the Brooklyn Defender Services and other legal organizations filed a class action lawsuit against ICE, challenging this move. Joining me in our studios is Andrea Science, an attorney with the New York Immigrant Family Unity Project at the Brooklyn Defender Services. They provide free lawyers to detained low-income immigrants. Thanks for being with us, Andrea.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us why you filed this lawsuit? What's wrong with hearings by teleconference?
Absolutely. So what's happening now is that instead of in years prior where our clients were sitting next to us at these hearings that determine whether or not they're going to be free, going to be back with their families, or going to be deported to a country where they possibly face persecution or harm, they are being beamed in by televideo. And it's simply not a fair hearing is the bottom line. They're not being given the opportunity to fully participate in their hearings, to communicate with their counsel, to see the evidence against them. And we think it's fundamentally wrong and unfair for the most important person in the hearing to be the only one who's not in the room.
And this suit alleges that they are infringing on basic certain rights that they have.
Exactly. We think that it's a violation of their basic constitutional due process right, as well as a bunch of rights that they have in the immigration law itself to be presented with evidence against them, to have counsel of choice, and to have a full and fair hearing. And that we think that means they need to be in the room with us.
So how much is this being used for people who don't know how it works? Can you explain how it's used and how much now?
Yes, absolutely, because the agency has used video conferencing in different amounts in the past. But what's happening right now at VEREC is that every single hearing is being done by video. So it's not just for a routine scheduling conference, you know, come back next month, here's a filing deadline. People are appearing by video for their bond hearings where they're being asked to testify for their own freedom, for hearings where we're determining whether they're mentally competent enough to even understand what the hearing is about, and most importantly, for hearings that are about their entire defense to removal, including whether they can stay permanently with their families or whether they have a case for asylum. So every single kind of hearing is being done on video.
And what's the justification for why they are using video teleconferencing?
Well, the agency has told us a couple of different things. They've told us that they had to do so for security purposes. We think that they can do so safely, and they did so for years and years and years, including in pastures. There's been a protest at VEREC in the past, and that has not stopped the production of people safely to court. And they've also basically told us that it's efficient. And we think that due process is more important than efficiency, and that, in fact, as we explained in the lawsuit, we've had enormous inefficiencies from this policy because the technology has been so problematic that we've had to adjourn hearing after hearing.
Can you quickly tell us, this is a class action suit, roughly how many people are being represented in the suit?
Sure. Obviously, it goes on and on, there's more and more people whose hearings are affected. There have been hundreds and hundreds of cases so far. Right now, I think at any given time, you've got 700 or 800 people on the docket at VEREC Street. And so as time goes on, you've got thousands of people affected.
Andrea Science is an attorney with the Brooklyn Defender Services. Andrea, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Takeaway is supported by Staples, with organization solutions for business, including calendars, file folders, banker's boxes, and storage bins. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples.
Now let's take a broader look at how immigration courts are relying on video teleconferencing across the country. WNYC's Beth Fertig is here with us. She's been covering this in New York and has also looked into how it's used nationally. Thanks for being here, Beth.
Hi, thank you.
So tell us about a bit more detail about what this actually looks like. Is there somebody on a screen? What is the setup for these court proceedings?
It's like Skype or FaceTime. When you go in the court, you see the immigrant in detention in their orange jumpsuit on a video monitor, and you can see what they're seeing in that little box on the top. They are seeing the judge, they're seeing their lawyer, they're seeing the translator, if they need one, and they have a very limited view of the rest of the courtroom. So if there's friends and family who have come to show their support, it looks like they can only see maybe the first row sometimes, or sometimes not even that. It depends how the camera is pointed that day. And there was one time when I was there, there was a man from West Africa on a bond hearing, and he needed a Twi interpreter, and he looked so confused. And at the end of the hearing, when he was actually given bond, you know, when the judge said, yes, I'll let you out on $15,000 bond, it looked like he didn't even know what was happening. Mm. And then his lawyer called him after and told him, and he was pleasantly surprised.
Now, have you experienced this? Is this as unusual as it sounds? Is have you encountered anything like this in the courts before in terms of using video conferencing like this?
Well, I can tell you that in the immigration courts, which are their own thing, they're run by the Department of Justice. Congress authorized the use of video for these courts in 1996, and it's really been growing over time. It's mostly used in detention centers. That's how it started, because detention centers could be in very remote locations, and they would need to get judges to hear them, and so the video enabled that. And still to this day, it's used mostly in detention courts.
Does it create a reporters like you going to get an archive now of video that you can get access to, or they keep it to themselves?
I suppose we could ask for that. But I just wanted to put in this point that it's very widely used right now, Arun. I did a Freedom of Information request to find out how often. And in fiscal year 2018, which ended in October, 126,000 hearings were done by video in immigration courts nationally. That was a 14% increase over the previous year. And there were more hearings, but the rate of increase for video was double the rate of hearings that were being held, the increase in that. So it's definitely been rising. And when I asked how many of these resulted in adjournments because of malfunctions, the Executive Office for Immigration Review, which runs the courts in the Department of Justice, they said about 800 nationally. So they consider it to be a very small number in which things go wrong and it results in adjournments.
But overall, there's a lot that this is happening a lot.
Yeah, it is. And there's only been one really conclusive study, I should say. There's a professor at UCLA Law School named Ingrid Egli. And she did a study that was published in 2015 in which she looked at people who were detained, because that's mostly where the video is used for people detained in detention centers who have to go to court. And it was really interesting because she found that comparing the people who had their hearings by video versus the ones in person, those by video were much more likely to be deported. But here's the other weird thing. She found that if they applied for asylum, there was the same rate of being granted asylum in person versus in video. So when I asked her why, she said it's because something about the video led to suppressed engagement, is how she put it. Hmm. That because the immigrant is sitting there hearing all the information by video, unless they're really motivated already and they're going to apply for asylum, they don't know what's available to them. The translation could be kind of awkward, the connection could be bad, and they're not really getting the same in-person treatment that they would normally get, and they don't know enough about their rights, and they're not likely to get lawyers either. And so that results in them losing more often when it's done by video.
Wow. Beth Fertig is a senior reporter here at WNYC. Beth, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you.